You're listening to Packers Talk Network. PackersTalk.com.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.
Packers Therapy.
It's Packers Therapy. It's Chris and Dave talking about the Green Bay Packers' 30-16 highly disappointing loss to the Dallas Cowboys at Lambeau Field today. Not a good feeling, Dave. Packers still not in sync on offense, and the injuries are piling up on the defensive side of the ball.
Well, we should, before we jump into this even, this has been a rough night for you and me. This is what, our fourth or fifth attempt to record this podcast. This is, so I know how Aaron Rodgers feels right now. Everything's going wrong. Every time I throw the ball to someone, they drop it. If I run the ball, I fumble. If a guy's open, I miss him. That's what we've had to go to a new Skype recording software. It's just been a disaster. Maybe this game should just never be talked about ever again. It's that bad.
It's sort of been like four turnovers and a home loss.
It feels a lot like that. Now I'm a lot more understanding for Aaron Rodgers. So we're going to try and keep this fresh by repeating what we said three or four times.
Yeah, tonight. Nice.
I think the first thing I said was, I think the problem with this team is not physical, it's emotional. And I think you told me how stupid I was, but I think I explained my position first. Should I go ahead and do that?
Oh, sure.
And this is after our special podcast that we just did.
I know. It was so much. Oh, by the way, if you were a contributor to us via PayPal and you did not get an email with instructions how you can get your super secret podcast, be in touch with us, PackersTherapy@yahoo.com, and let us know, and we will check Santa's special list and see if you have been naughty or nice. And because we did miss at least one person along the way. So anyway, with that out of the way, let's get to ripping Aaron Rodgers here. Dave, go on and tell us what's wrong with him psychically.
Psychically?
Psychologically, I guess. Well, we should do this podcast psychically.
Chris just fumbled the speech.
Yeah, fumble!
Which I do all the time. So my theory is that these guys are messed up in their heads, and that's why you're seeing drop passes, missed receivers, fumbles, missed tackles, guys falling on the ground. I mean, I think losing begets losing, right? And you've got to – I don't know how you turn around other than you just have to win. Leadership can take care of it too. I mean, I think someone's got to stand up on this team, on defense, offense. One has to be number 12, has to stand up and take a leadership role. But I think the problem is psychological in their heads. And the reason I point that out is I thought from the very first series, I thought this team – well, the first series, our defense just gave up a touchdown like nobody's business. I mean, Dallas went right down our throat, and it didn't even seem like we were even close. It almost felt like a Belichick sort of somehow getting and seeing what our plays are ahead of time, kind of because we were – whatever they ran, it just worked. Everything was just – and they went right down the field and scored. And maybe that set the whole momentum with this team. But I thought from the first offensive drive that the Packers had, I thought any time Rodgers missed his man or a play didn't work, that the look in his eye was terrible. He would shake his head and sort of look to the ground. There was never a sort of, you know – a toughness that there seemed to be about him. It felt like kind of here we go again. And I know I felt that as a fan, which I can because I'm a fan, but they can't do that. They have to play hard. They have to get themselves dialed up, and they need to play football. And I felt that they got down on themselves very, very quickly. I think we talked a little bit on the drive chart. I thought this game was still in play for the Packers. They were down 20-6, and they had the ball on the 1 yard line. They're about to score, and that's when Rodgers fumbled. And I felt at that point that was when the game kind of really turned. That was all the way with a minute and 18 seconds left in the third quarter. So, I mean, the Packers were in this game to the, you know, pretty close to the end. But for most of the game before that, I felt that they were just had sour looks on their face, especially number 12. So that's my theory. I think there are other problems that we'll talk about. I really want to talk about the McGinn article that came up this week that really blasted McCarthy and Rodgers, and I think is pretty telling after this game. That a lot of those things are true. But I'm going to start by thinking that these guys, the one of the main problems is that it's in their heads. They have to somehow turn that around.
Yeah, I don't know that you can tell that from watching on TV. I also don't know how much of the feeling that you're projecting onto them is just your personal feelings that, you know, you're kind of seeing the way you're feeling and the way I'm feeling too. But I'm just not ready to say, you know, because I feel let down, deflated, disappointed that that's the way Aaron Rodgers is feeling or J.C. Treader or any of these guys. It would seem that way, but that's the way kind of the way I'm viewing it, you know, sitting downstairs in my recliner in front of the 50-inch TV. I mean, that's my feeling. I'm not sure if that's the same for them in that locker room. And these guys are professionals. I mean, they do this all the time. Rodgers has done it for a dozen years. These guys have been to Super Bowls. So I'm not sure that that's the case. It's possible, I suppose, but I don't think it's necessarily, that clear cut. And moreover, I hope it's not the case, because if they're psychologically goofed up, I don't know how you would just flip a switch and say, it's all good. It's all happy. We're all positive. Come on, guys. I think it's a lot more complicated than that. If there is frustration, I think it's because of what other teams are doing to them. And Pete Doherty's made that case in his post-game article today, talking about the fact that the way defenses are approaching the Packers right now is not by applying pressure to Rodgers and making him make quick decisions, but it's rather in being very soft and giving him a lot of time to pass, because he will not take a chance. And he will hold the ball, and he will look, and things will eventually break down. It's kind of counterintuitive, but instead of putting heat on him, what they're trying to do is just contain him in the pocket. So it's, you know, if it was that, I mean, they could game plan around that. But if you're right, it's a lot more complicated problem that I don't know that there's any way that it's going to turn around except by stacking a few successes.
Well, I don't know the chicken and egg issue is, you know, losing it becomes the psychological problem, or is it the psychological problem now is getting the losing? But I think that they're doing certain things. Can you read the quote? You had said Doherty had put something out. You read that to me. Can you go ahead and read that? Because I think that was pretty, pretty interesting.
Sure. This is from the PackerNews.com, which I guess now is a combination, of the Green Bay Press Gazette and the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. They're all owned by Gannett, and so now they all have everything combined. So anyway, this is from the Doherty column, and he says, if I can find it here again, teams obviously think that Rodgers is not comfortable standing in the pocket and throwing down after down. They think that he will overthink where to throw. He will not want to risk an interception with a quick delivery, or he'll hold the ball while hoping something bigger and better opens up. So now Rodgers and McCarthy can count on seeing this kind of defense week in and week out until they can make defensive coordinators pay.
Yeah, and I think that makes a ton of sense. I feel like the McGinn article, which I will have to pull up here, and my new Apple, do you have the new Apple operating system where you have to hit the button twice to log in?
Yes.
Do you like that?
It's okay.
I don't know if I like that very much, but anyway, so I have to come in. So I guess what McGinn is saying, I'd like to just walk through some of these quotes a little bit later and have you respond to them, see what you think.
And this is from the McGinn article on Sunday morning in the Journal Sentinel. Right.
And I can't find it off the top of my head, but I think is happening with these defenses is I thought a lot of times they rush four, maybe five, and then everyone else is playing coverage, and including the linebackers that are playing deep coverage. And the Packers, I don't care how accurate he is, when you put, I guess, maybe four or five receivers into the pattern, but they're being in the mix, is how many, if you're rushing four, how many are left? Is that, how many are on a side? Is that 13?
There are 11 guys on a team, dude.
So, so they have seven guys in coverage and four guys, you know, running into that mess, which is always seems to be 10 yards down, down the field. And my thought is, I'm really off my game. This, we've already talked about all this already. It's really hard to make this all up again. But I thought the thing that was really telling to me is the play of Sean Lee and the play that he made on Davante Adams. I found the play. It was a second, or it was a third and 12. Davante Adams caught a ball for a first down, and he was met almost immediately by Sean Lee, who is a linebacker playing 12 yards down the field. He's well into coverage and can sit there and clean the clocks of our receivers, because he doesn't have to worry about a running back popping out and catching a five-yard pass, or he doesn't have to worry about, you know, and they're doing this on first down, second down, and third down. They're playing so deep and taking out the type of routes that we're running. And what the Packers need to do, I think, to get out of the psychological problem I think they have, is they need to sort of reinvent their offense a little bit and do what they did up until later on in the game when they got down to the one-yard line. They threw a bunch of passes to Ty Montgomery out of the backfield. There was three plays in that drive. They threw one other one that was incomplete. But each one went for 10, one went for 12, one for 14 yards, roughly. And I felt that that was what the defense gave him. It was just a quick hitter. And then he had all kinds of room because everyone is playing down the field with their backs to the ball. I feel like the Packers are going to have to play more of that and make defenses adjust to them rather than just jamming what we do. You know, this is who we are, this is what we are. No one's going to tell us different. It's been 14, 15 games now, and it's not working. So they're going to have to figure this out. They're going to have to adjust a little bit. They're going to have to come off of their high horse and be a little humble and adjust to what they do. Otherwise, I don't think they're going to win many games this year.
Well, I'm not sure that's exactly what's happening if you believe Pete Doherty. I mean, he said McCarthy basically threw everything he had at the Cowboys. After dabbling in using more personnel groupings the last couple of games, he went all in on Sunday by shuttling personnel on and off the field, snap after snap. The one that might have worked best was when he went with five receivers or four receivers and a tight end, sometimes with Ty Montgomery lined up in the backfield and sometimes with the backfield empty. It sounds like they're trying to do just exactly what we want them to do. Have a bunch of personnel groupings, not going with that, you know, no huddle thing where you have the same personnel on the field all the time. You know, they're kind of doing what they do. And that's a good thing. I mean, they've changed it up. And that isn't apparently working, because when Rodgers doesn't get pressure and he can stand there, it seems like he does overthink and is unwilling to, you know, do anything that's even remotely risky. He would much rather have pressure on him where there's a hot receiver and there's going to be openings for him.
Well, okay, I know, I think that's a fair comment to make, because I'm looking at the end of the game. It was toward the end of the game that they made that adjustment. They used Ty Montgomery in the backfield. That drive went 12 plays, 71 yards, took almost 6 minutes off, got it down to the one-yard line. The next, after the interception, that's a hard drive to interpret because, you know, he missed Cobb in the end zone. That should have been a touchdown right there, and he missed him. And then the drive after that, they scored a touchdown. So I guess if they – and that was a bit in garbage time. I mean, certainly there were a lot of short passes there because that's what Dallas was giving. But maybe toward the end of the game – they did adjust a little bit to do a little bit more of the short passing. I love the Ty Montgomery on a third down or second down and getting him in the backfield and have him maybe block or sometimes pop out and make those linebackers or safeties play honest and at least have a thought to show the short end of the field. So you might be right that maybe McCarthy threw everything he had, didn't come to it till late. But I, you know, that drive and maybe a little bit of what they did toward the end of the game, maybe that is a glimpse of hope that we can have for the Bear game on Thursday.
Well, you know, just as luck would have it, Dave, I'm watching a tape of the Packer game right now, and the play in question where he missed Cobb in the end zone, just came up. And the next play after that, you might recall, was a third down, and I believe it was Durant that knocked down the short pass. But who Rodgers was trying to go to was Montgomery coming out of the backfield. He came around, he was available short, and it was batted down at the line. You know, I mean, that's one of those things. He was trying to do exactly, you know, what you want them to be doing, but there's a defender in the way. And by the way, looking again at that pass that he missed Cobb in the end zone, as I look at it again from the behind Rodgers view, now, I don't know if this is the reality, but the way it looks from that view, number 31, the defender Jones, who I think might be a nickel defender. Anyway, he's kind of in the line where Rodgers was trying to throw it over the top of him and still get it to Cobb. And now that's a throw that, you know, NFL quarterbacks have to make and often do make, but that was not as easy of a throw as it appeared from the higher angle side view. There was in fact a defender there that had to be navigated. And I think that's probably why Rodgers missed him. You know, he puts a premium on not turning the ball over, although he's doing that more and more with a fumble and interception today. This is one of those things where one of his strengths might also be one of his weaknesses. You know, his aversion to turning the ball over means that sometimes, you know, he's not going to try to fit the ball in there. And that has served him well to this point, but maybe it's to the point where he's got to change some of those tactics and make a couple of, you know, a couple of chances, you know, where today he overshot a couple of guys, he undershot a couple of guys. He's trying to put the ball exactly where they're the only guy that can make a play on it. And maybe when you do that, you're going to miss more guys because you're trying to be too fine.
Well, did you see the play where he threw to Montgomery as he did a crossing pattern across the fields on a third down? They got a first down, but the throw was low and Montgomery did catch it, but he had to go to the ground, but it was a first down. Did you see the view from Rodgers from one angle? He was sort of like giving it a lot of body English and, you know, like, oh, I threw it low, but he caught it. But you can just tell that Rodgers is just – I go back to the psychological part. It's like he's throwing off his back foot. When he throws, there's like a hesitancy that's about him. There's kind of – like I just cringe just thinking about half of his throws. I just feel like he is not the tough guy that I'm going to put the belt on and beat you down with it. You know, he's lost that. And – So I come back to, by the time, you know, during the end of the game where they may have changed a bit of the offense that might have been more successful, that, you know, they had a mountain of mistakes to climb up to that point. And, you know, Dallas on the other side, everything looks great for them. And my gosh, they should just call Fox the Dallas Cowboy announcing network.
Well, you got Troy Aikman doing the game, for crying out loud, you know?
Yeah, and you got two rookies that look, you know, that they're playing pretty well. I think running back is actually probably more of a real deal than the quarterback. I think given a couple of clutch third down plays, you know, will he be able to hit a guy like the Rodgers and Brady has done in the past? You know, he's got a lot to prove still, but man, they're excited about this team on Fox. That was really hard to take. That was another just awful. If I could listen to it on the radio, I certainly would, but that delay is hard.
That delay is very difficult. But, you know, it's a shiny object. You know, you have a fresh out of the wrapper. You know, you've got, you know, Ezekiel Elliott. You know, he's a number four pick in the draft. And then you got this guy, you know, kind of out of nowhere. You know, he's from Mississippi State. He's wearing Brett Favre's number. You know, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of good stories, and they're kind of something new and different. The Packers have been there again and again and again. And, I think announcers are people, and they get caught up in particular stories. And I think they were caught up kind of in this cowboy story where people had kind of written them off because, you know, Tony Romo is hurt again, and then they have this guy who kind of, you know, mid-round draft pick, right, comes out of nowhere. And, you know, he's playing real well. And they got this mauling offensive line, and they lead the league in rushing. And you've got, what, four games in a row by this running back, Elliott, over you know, 100 yards, and he's setting records and all this kind of stuff. And the Packers, on the other hand, are just, well, you know, it's the same kind of thing we've seen. It's Jordy Nelson. It's, you know, Aaron Rodgers. It's the guys you've heard of. It's Julius Peppers. It's Clay Matthews. There's not anything shiny and new and exciting about that. And I think that is oftentimes, I think, why you get what you get, because there's nothing that's new, different, and exciting about what the Packers bring to the table.
Yeah, I guess that's fair. And I do think that there's an issue with the fact – I really want to find this this quote. Let me find it.
Is this the one from McGinn?
This is the McGinn quote in his article that I think is kind of the crux of the problem. McGinn says, Rodgers, who can be extremely sensitive, knows full well that no one in the building would dare criticize him publicly. And from McCarthy on down, that's the way it is. Seemingly every third fan in the seats owns his jersey, and there's little question who's the most popular member of the organization. Meanwhile, eager Beaver young assistants across the league have had 10 going on 11 years to study the tendencies of McCarthy and Rodgers. They're really not fooling anyone anymore. The book is out there, and the advantage of having been together for more than a decade probably is countered by the realities of trying to stay fresh against well-schooled opponents. And I think that's what we've already talked about, that I think they need to recognize that they don't have the receivers that can go downfield. I think that can beat the cornerbacks of today. I mean, today's cornerbacks are really fast. I don't think Nelson is particularly fast at his 80-90% pace. I don't think Cobb is a speedster. He's quick. He's small. You know, he's kind of a gap back kind of a receiver. He's not a guy you want going down the field catching bombs. Adams is – now he's out for a while. He probably concussed. You know, he was probably more your prototypical-looking receiver, fast and, you know, bigger guy. But, you know, the other guys that probably they could run stuff down the field, they don't trust. They don't trust Jeff Janis, Aberderis. He's probably not super fast guy either. The rookie they have, they don't trust him either because he dropped his one attempt against Detroit.
Davis,
yeah. So the guys that they probably could have run down the field, they're not using very much, and I think they're mismatching the kind of receivers they have to their offense. So I think this idea that what they do and what they've been successful at, one is their personnel doesn't fit it, and two, defenses, I think, have picked up on it and now know how to react to it and are being very, very successful. It'll be interesting to see what they come out with against Chicago. Will it be, you know, fade, you know, Nelson down the sidelines, fade back shoulder, Cobb down 20 yards down the field, or will they kind of come back to this Ty Montgomery out of the backfield and short pass game that they were pretty successful at? So that's what I think the problem is. I feel like it starts with the scheme is not working. It's getting into their heads, and now they're sort of down the negative cycle path that they've got to crawl themselves out of. And Chicago at home is a great way to kind of come back, right? You know, that's a team that has done historically really bad at Lambeau, except for last year. You know, that could be what the doctor orders here. And I hope they can kind of scheme it up and get back on pace this week.
I don't know if I'm really buying McGinn again, because, all right, McCarthy's been coaching the Packers since 2006. And, you know, they've been running this scheme for 10 years. You're trying to tell me that it took 9 years. Last year they caught up to him finally. Well, why didn't they catch up to him in year 4 or year 5? I mean, it takes that long for defenses to scheme? I think, you know, people are grasping for an answer, and so they are seizing on to everything that suddenly the league has caught up to them. You would think, with all these eager Beaver assistants that McGinn insists upon, why weren't those eager Beaver assistants able to catch on to him in, I don't know, 2013, 2014? I mean, it was recently as 2 years ago, but all of a sudden, after game 6 last year, they finally figured him out. I mean, it took that long. It must have been one hell of a great scheme if they could go 8 years before somebody figured it out. I mean, that's incredible. I mean, it should put McCarthy in the Hall of Fame immediately. I just, to me, that doesn't make sense that it was such a tough nut to crack. I mean, hell, the Allies cracked the Enigma code in less time. You know, I just don't buy that now because they're struggling, these are all of a sudden the reasons that it's now become apparent. It's so crystal clear now that they do this and that. They've been doing this and that for years and years. And today they changed it up and they lost the game. So I don't know if you can say, ah, here we go, the magic bullet. I'm just not buying that. I don't think that you can just lay it out. Now, is it maybe a factor? Because they do kind of the same sorts of things, you know, maybe. But I don't think that you can point to anything in particular. I think it's everything in general. And it might just be one of those stretches where it's something a lot more fundamental. You know, you have a quarterback that has been a two-time MVP, a Super Bowl champion, Super Bowl MVP. He doesn't want to be a game manager. You know, he wants to be a guy who's a playmaker. You remember on his call-in show, or not call-in show, the interview show that he did with Jason Wilde for
podcast.
4 years.
Yeah, right.
You know, he talked with disdain about game managers. That was like the worst thing you could call him, you know. And I don't think, you know, he wants to be that guy that, you know, three steps, boom, five steps, boom, getting the ball out, moving it down the field, moving the chains. I think he wants to be a guy that is making the dramatic play, you know, that angle route 20 yards down the field, you know, on the hash mark. When he rolls out and he has three options, I don't think he wants to take the first or second guys, you know, the shorter intermediate route. I think he's like Brett Favre. I think he wants to go that next place. I mean, he's been successful at that. That's how he defines who he is. And I just think that's part of the issue. He's not satisfied in taking what's given. I think, you know, because of who he is and what he's done and where he is in his career, I think Favre did exactly the same thing. He did not want to take the safe thing. He wanted that big play. He knew he could do it. He's done it before, and now he wants to do it all the time. It's human nature. It's a part of aging. It's a part of becoming experienced at your job. You think you can cut corners. You don't have to follow the orthodoxy. After all, you've got pelts on the wall to prove it. And I think it might be something as fundamental as human nature and not some of these other things, these schematic things that people want to point to. Those could be contributing factors, but it might be something that just kind of between his ears in terms of who he sees himself and his role as a quarterback right now.
Can I read some quotes from the article and have you respond to them? Because there's a number of different things in here.
Sure, I would be happy to. I mean, don't get me wrong in this. You know, I mean, I thought it was an interesting article. I thought he made some good points, but this is so classic McGinn that it's just hard to take it completely seriously. But go on.
There was a long article, but there were some things that jumped out, and I point them out because I agree with them.
Sure.
I didn't point out the ones I thought were ridiculous, which you might think the whole thing is. But here's the first one. The abject failure on first down over the last 22 games is due in large part to Rodgers, who has had a respectable ground game and a first-rate offensive line. The short to intermediate passing game on first down that sets the table for what's to come has been missing. What do you think about
now,
that?
Yeah, now, I do think there's some truth in that he is kind of eschewing that short rhythm game. I think there is something to that, but I also think that a part of their struggles on first down is, you know, their running game is hit and miss. Eddie Lacy's hurt a lot. When Eddie Lacy does play, he's not always effective. He is sometimes. I think their offensive line, while very good at pass blocking, is average, mediocre when it comes to running. And I think that some of their problems on first down are not just because Rodgers, I think, would rather throw it downfield. I think a lot of it is because they are not a terribly dependable running team.
No, but it's more than just first down, too. Don't you feel when it's third and five, let's say it's second and 10, and he completes a pass, and rather than break a tackle, the guy gets tackled, now it's third and five. It used to be I watch the game and think, third and five, no problem. And now I think, third down, crap. we need four, five, six downs to be able to get that first down. Like, I feel like I have no confidence in their ability to get that first down. But I think that idea of the short passing game is just not there either. It's his accuracy, the lack of a tight end. This game they went in with one running back to really speak of, and they didn't use Ty Montgomery till later. I think that idea of getting short and manageable distance so that they can get first downs on first down or on second down rather than getting a lot of third downs. I wonder what the stats would be of how many third downs the Packers get to. I suppose it'd be skewed by the amount of three and outs they've had, then you have fewer third downs. But it feels like they are not getting a lot of first downs on first and second down as maybe other teams, or certainly as in times they have in the past. All right, you want another quote?
Sure, but I will mention that as I watch the recording of the game, it was just first and 10, and they just gave it to Lacy for a loss of one. So, yeah. I mean, it just – Eddie Lacy is hit and miss.
It's a hit and miss. No, that's right. I think – I mean, even Ezekiel, I think, had some first down carries that were for short yardage. I mean, there's not going to be – like a 5.6 average is pretty good. I think first down efficiency, though, I think is certainly part of the problem. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I suppose, because the stats show that they do worse on first downs than most teams. But I don't know that that's necessarily a passing game issue as much as McGinn seems to think it is.
Okay, the second one he says, and this gets to the hard count. And I thought today was there was the hard count, trying to get guys and we're switching and then running the play before while the guy's running off the field. It feels like we're kind of reaching for gimmicks to move the ball down the field as opposed to just plays. And so McGinn mentions that, saying, still, Rodgers continues to hard count time after time as the play clock winds down to one or two. Actually, I didn't think they did that as much today.
No, they didn't, but I know what McGinn is saying, and I'll react to it right now, is that I think that is one of the issues, or was one of the issues with their offense, especially when they were keeping the same personnel on the field and trying to go without a huddle and all that stuff. And we talked about this on the podcast. You know, Rodgers comes to the line, he looks around, he hard counts, he points, he lifts the leg, he doesn't get the snap. I think all these things, trying to deceive other teams. And it's almost like, something worked a couple times and they were able to get big gains because they had free plays. In fact, today on the ball where he overshot Cobb, that was one of those he thought he had a free play. It turned out that he didn't. Maybe that was also a contributing factor in why the throw was errant. But it's like anything else in life, Dave. When you get positive reinforcement on something, you say, "Hey, I'm going to do that again and again." And he's been very effective at getting 12 men on the field. He's been very effective at drawing teams off sides, and because he's got the reinforcement of those things working, of either getting the penalty or getting a big play downfield, you want to do it, and it becomes a part of what you do, not something you mix in once in a while when there's an opportunity, but then you try to go for it at the loss of the continuity in the offense. So I do think there definitely is something to that argument, that that's become too big a part of what they do, of their bag of tricks, to the point where it's not a bag of tricks anymore. It's what they do.
It's like depending
on
it, yeah.
Well, yeah. And instead of it being something that they take advantage of when the opportunity presents itself, now they're trying to do it, and I think it's at the detriment of the rest of the offense.
Yeah, McGinn goes on. He says he also has an eagle eye out for substituting defensive linemen.
Yeah.
And twice this season, he's drawn a penalty via quick counts, which was an issue today.
That happened once today. Yep.
He goes on, the offense probably would be better off if his teammates could focus on the play and getting off the ball in advantageous fashion without all the other stuff going on so often.
And I do agree with that. Yeah.
Okay. I think that's a good point. And I thought, at least from the jumping around, with 2 seconds left and clap, that seemed to go away today.
And then taking the time out and blowing a time out, right. That got me.
Yeah.
I did not like that.
So third quote, one NFC personnel man had said several times that the Packers receivers don't run routes in the classic sense of the word. The talent at wide receiver is more than adequate, according to several scouts, But McCarthy's staple remains isolation routes instead of using bunches, rubs, or other creative devices to give receivers easier releases into the secondary. And that was a quote if coming from something you mentioned earlier, that what teams want to do is keep Aaron Rodgers in the pocket and extend plays, because if they can disrupt the timing in the first second or so, then it seems to not break down against the defense. It seems to more break down against the Packers offense. And what we saw last year when we were at the Detroit game with Dr. Klaus is that receivers, they'd run these routes and then they would stop. And then become like a schoolyard play. Then they're like, where is Rodgers running to?
Well,
where do I have
there
to
There would be
to?
No place to go, right? Because you, if your play is predicated on something happening quickly and it doesn't happen, well, then what are you going to do? Yeah. I mean, everyone's running these short routes, right? And the ball isn't out. Well, they're looking around to see, you know, why the ball didn't come out.
Yeah.
And so then they're trying to improvise. And that is part of the problem. When they take away the short passes and you can't pass on rhythm, you're going to get a lot of that standing around and a lot of schoolyard stuff.
Yeah, you know, you're right. They rarely do the bunches anymore. You know, and certainly crossing patterns and the legal picks and things like that that used to – I mean, every fan against the Packers felt like they ran illegal picks forever. That's what they bring up. And now they say, they can't run anymore because they changed the rules, and now look at their offense. I think I see legal picks every game. And it seems against us –
And Dallas twice today, at least twice, yeah.
So, but they seem I don't recall us doing that very often today. So
right.
That's maybe another part of the issue. I think this is fourth quote. At the same time, let's end this nonsense about receivers needing to gain the trust of Rodgers. What he needs to do is his job: throw accurately to the open man and let the coaches handle it from there. My guess is that Rodgers, after 12 years as a pro, would be a hard man to coach. Can you imagine another player saying, it's a silly drill, I did it today as a favor to the coaches, as did Rodgers when McCarthy employed the wet ball drill last month in a practice with rain, when rain was in the forecast for the Detroit game? So that's getting to a little bit of, one, this idea that he doesn't trust Jeff Janis, so he never throws it to him. And today, there is a play, if you recall, he threw one to Jeff Janis, and I think Aikman even mentioned it, that Janis was open for a couple seconds until he finally threw it to him. He didn't throw it to him right away. And I, you know, for all of us that sort of follow this, my immediately thought is that's because he doesn't trust Jeff Janis. And rather than just saying, hey, you've got to let these guys be professional, throw the ball. And if he can't play, he can't play. He shouldn't be on the team. This idea of trust is nonsense. And the other is about Rodgers' sort of ego is getting in the way of this and how that affects the team. What do you think about those things?
Well, I think there's a few things there to unpack. And on the first part of it, the trust part of it, I do think that's an invention of sports writers. I don't think, at least the way I interpret the notion of trust, I'm not going to throw it to you because I don't trust you. I'm not sure he has that kind of time to think, whoa, that's Jeff Janis, I'm not going to throw it there. It's happening so quickly, you're looking for a guy in green, or today blue and gold, who's going to be open. I don't think he's got time to really contemplate, you know, who's open at this particular moment in time. I just don't think that's true, or I don't think that McCarthy or Rodgers would put it in those terms. But sports writers and guys on the radio and podcasters always talk about, you know, trust, like he's got the time to really contemplate that. I just don't think that's the case. However, I will say this, though. Today, Jeff Janis, the first pass he caught it beyond the first down line, and then he promptly ran back. And they're lucky. Well, yes, but they're lucky they got a good mark on that, because it wasn't that he caught the ball and was pushed back. He ran back. And I think they got a very favorable spot on that when they didn't deserve it. That's one reason why Janis is a problem. Last game, how was it that Jeff Janis wound up in the same spot that Jordy Nelson was? My money is not that Jordy Nelson ran the wrong route, but somehow here's, you know, Jeff Janis bringing his defender right where Jordy Nelson's trying to make the catch. I mean, Janis doesn't operate well. I mean, he just doesn't.
The reason
he's on the team is for his special teams. And when you have an injury like they did today, when Adams went out, they were forced to use guys that they had available, you know, and in those particular spots, because of his size, he was the next guy up. And I think he's there because he's, although we, this is another classic, last week, you know, he gets an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty because he's running downfield out of bounds. I mean, that's just not smart. He's not a very savvy football player. You know, let's put it that way.
He's,
I mean,
no Micah Hyde, huh?
Exactly. You know, he cost him twice last week, once by running a stupid route and once by running out of bounds. You know, I think that's a stupid rule, but it is a rule, and it cost him 15 yards. Jeff Janis is, I personally think that if he would not be on the team if he didn't have the value that he has on special teams. He's fast. He's a big body. You know, although he got forced out of bounds last week, he's usually pretty good at defeating that. That's why he's on the team, not because he runs great routes.
Yeah, that's fair, but. I guess, like I said, if you don't have guys that you can trust on the team, they shouldn't be on the team for one. Two, I don't care how much you trust Jordy Nelson at this point. I don't think he can run routes that they're used to him running. I mean, he can't catch a one-on-one, you know, down the sideline, make a cut, and he's it's a touchdown. I don't think he can do that anymore. I don't think you can trust Randall Cobb to out-jump a guy for a ball on a third down. He's not tall. He's not big. So you can trust those guys, but you got to put them in situations they can succeed. I think Janis is one that you can tell him run down the field and he can outrun somebody. But anyway, what do you think about the Rodgers ego piece?
But if he's not going to be in the place where you expect it to be, what good is it if he runs by somebody and he's not where he's supposed to be on the play?
Well, then he shouldn't be on the field. He shouldn't play.
Well, that's it. He's a special teams guy that was forced to play from scrimmage today because of the injury to Adams. He did not play, at least on a regular basis, he did not play until Adams went down with what appeared to be a concussion.
Yeah, but, you know, he's in the game, and that one play in particular, you know, he waited. Clearly trust is an issue then with him. I think you could agree.
I don't know. I just, at least not the way I defined trust. You know, it's you know, I just don't believe that he's saying, no, I see you're open, I'm not going to pass it to you. No, if he's open where he's supposed to be, I think the ball comes to him. But he might be open, but Rodgers didn't know he was going to be there. You know, he's got his progressions, he's got his reads, and, you know, Janis might be open, but if he's open in a place where Rodgers is not looking for him, it's no good.
Yeah. Well, here's the last quote, and then we should take a break, because this is the final hammer to the blow to the head here.
It is, really, yes.
Also,
I believe they call that the coup de grace.
Yes, there you go. Also, can people please stop calling Rodgers a lock for the Pro Football Hall of Fame? Rodgers is close to securing a bust in Canton, but to clinch a berth, he must get out of this tailspin and reach at least another Super Bowl. His playoff resume since 2010 is spotty, to say the least. Rules changed have make it less challenging physically to play the quarterback role, and a glossy passer rating for Rodgers and others need to be weighed carefully by selectors and evaluating quarterbacks of this generation. So I thought that was of all of it I really liked, I thought that was a bit of a low blow, and it made me think, is he a lock for Canton at this point? He's won one Super Bowl, he's won a few MVPs. I suppose his resume does not look that different than Favre, who just picked up his ring today, which is a whole other factor. Someone tweeted that Rodgers plays particularly poorly when Favre is in the building.
That's interesting, isn't it? Yeah,
it is.
I think somebody said that he's 0 for 2 when Favre's in the house. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think I don't know. You know, with him being such a smart guy, and you know, maybe there's something to that. Certainly, Favre doesn't care.
No, not anymore. He doesn't.
Favre is living the good life, at least on TV. And did you enjoy the part when he was on?
You know, I had the sound on, but it was down low. And the little bit that I heard, you know, he had Aaron's back. You know, he was, if I was starting a team, I'd have Aaron Rodgers. He can afford to be magnanimous at this point in his career. I mean, a lot of it's in the past. He's got his mustard jacket. He's got his name on the wall at Lambeau. I mean, he's been to the NFL mountaintop. You know, he's in his his late 40s now. I think he's your age, right?
Yeah, he's 47.
He's 47, and he's apparently, you know, in pretty good health at this point. So yeah, everything is all good. You know, it's all seashells and balloons, and that's fine. I thought he was okay on TV, but I don't know how much I believe what he had to say. I think he said the right thing. Because he could, and it doesn't matter for him any longer. How he really feels, might be a different question.
Yeah, I wonder.
As far as Aaron Rodgers being a lock for the Hall of Fame, now, I think Jason Wilde believes that. I think when you hear him talking on his podcast, I also saw where Bart Winkler, who does the morning show on The Fan in Milwaukee, he also tweeted out that he thinks – that Rodgers is a lock for the Hall of Fame. I think it's a good chance he'll be in the Hall of Fame. You know, he's two MVPs, a Super Bowl champion. He has the highest passer rating in the history of the NFL, at least at this point.
So far, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, although that's declining a little bit, but he's still, you know, at this point, he is still the highest rated passer in history. But he's also 32. He probably needs to play another 3 years at least before he would have that ticket punched. And if he has three more years, like the last year, the last 16 or so games, it becomes a lot closer call. I mean, if this is what he's going to look like in the second half of his career, it doesn't take away the stuff he did in the first half, but it makes it a lot closer call. I think ultimately he would get in, but he's certainly not a first ballot like, you know, Peyton Manning or Tom Brady, probably even Drew Brees. But I think that he is a very good chance to get in, even if it's not first ballot. I can't say it's a lock because he still does have, you know, he's 32 years old. He's probably got at least three more years yet where he's going to have to prove his bona fides.
Yeah, you know, his chances might be better if he were to stop playing right now. I mean, if he has three more years that are like this, people are going to remember this, and he will take his chances. It'll be taken away from him.
Well, you know, I don't think he will, David. Here's the reason why I think that. If he has another couple of seasons like this one, he's not going to be a Packer, and he'll wind up someplace else, and that may be the kind of Brett Favre second act rejuvenation that he would need. And I think he would probably be – if he continues like this – he'll wind up somewhere else, and he'll probably be better for it.
Yeah, that's probably fair. I hope that doesn't happen. I still want him to be my quarterback, but my goodness, I can't remember him having a worse game than he had today. I mean, there may have been some really
The Vikings game was worse.
Yeah, but did he? I mean, he threw a bad interception and fumbled, and even on throws, I mean, missed guys consistently. I mean, there are very few good plays that he had, much less, you know, counting the bad plays. His passer rating, I think, certainly has been worse. But I just thought, boy, one thing after another, he just made a ton of mistakes that was clearly on him and not on other people. I could be just my memory.
I don't think this was that bad of a game. I thought he was better this week than last week. Even as far as that goes, it was a bad interception this week. The fumble was bad. But again, I think the Vikings game and last week's game, he had 65 passer rating. Today he was almost 91. You know, not great by today's standards, 91. But, you know, it was good enough. What was bad is, you know, he took a bad sack today. He had a couple of fumbles that, you know, weren't lost balls, but still. In fact, I'm watching one right now, you know, in the fourth quarter where the ball gets knocked out of his hand as he's attempting to pass. They recover it. But still, you know, I mean, he was not sharp today, but he has been worse this season. There's no doubt about that.
Hmm. All right. Well, we should take this very long break and hope our recording software has worked, or this may be another missing podcast, Chris.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to be back with more Packers Therapy after we do some adjusting and making sure the software is working. We'll be back to talk more about the Packers 30-16 loss to the Dallas Cowboys. Packers Therapy, Chris and Dave. Back with the second and final segment of Packers Therapy. Chris and Dave, we're going to do some correspondence that we've received and a lot of email because we didn't do a podcast last week. We decided to take a little break at the Packers Therapy Hotel and Casino. Check it out. It's our annual inspection tour.
Blue light special. Yeah.
Exactly right. So we will have the betting lines for you momentarily. Want to acknowledge a few people have been in touch with us by Twitter. I knew I read someplace, Dave, about the Packers being 0-2 with Favre in attendance. Well, the place I read that was actually from our guy John Sturrock. John in the UK tweeting at us right after the game. Thank you for that, John. Logan Robertson in touch with us saying he needs some therapy, and he also wanted to say how much he looks forward to the show. It was a pleasure to listen to the donor episode. Grateful for you both. That's a very, very nice thing, Logan. We do appreciate that. And, of course, we have some email and several tweets from Richard Durain, who has been a loyal correspondent. We appreciate that, Richard. He mentions that listening to fans complain about the Packers on the radio and then without prompting his three-year-old sings, "I love my Green Bay Packers." That's a good story, Richard. Thank you for that. John P. Checking in saying the Packers display the red ass. I guess I don't really know what he's referring to. The red ass is something I always think of as being bitter, and maybe that's something that happened that I didn't see. If they are bitter, John, I understand why. Captain Dave, Dave Moberg, a couple of tweets and an email to us. We appreciate that. Dave thinks that Gunter's got to be a goner, right? You know, it's possible that Gunter's performance today was not encouraging. He had a couple of good games before this, Ladarius Gunter, but today he was bad. I mean, there was no question. He got turned around, fell down one time. He gave up a big gainer. It was not a good day for him, but I don't think he's going to be cut. I don't know if you have an opinion on that. I would sooner get rid of Meach Goodson, but, you know, the reason that Goodson is playing is because the same reason that Janis plays. He's really good on special teams.
Yeah, you can't cut him because are guys on the street better than the guys you have in your team? That shouldn't happen. Now, guys that are injured, it might be better than Gunter, but they're hurt. And a groin injury, I don't know, does that go away in a couple weeks? And Sam Shields may not play again. And I didn't, you know, Rollins probably could have helped had Rollins play. You know, who would have thought that Rollins would be so important at this point of his career?
Well, I'll say, man, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, we're going to have to play with Gunter, and he's just going to have to improve. I thought he was a young, you know, pretty improving and impressive player, but when you're in a place where you got to be counted on, it's a lot different than being, you know, someone that can make plays once in a while and sort of be in the background. So, you know, hopefully, I don't know what's the next really good passing team we're going to play. I don't think Dallas necessarily was a very good passing team. I think they were efficient, but not, you know, great. I don't think the Bears necessarily are, but eventually we're going to be playing some teams that pass pretty well. If Gunter is one of our starting corners, that'd be pretty rough. Well, we'll see, but if he gets cut, I don't think he's getting cut anytime soon.
Yeah, I think that's Dallas's deal. I mean, they're a running team, and they are an efficient passing team. I mean, that's what they do. That's who they are. And, you know, today they did both effectively. I mean, their quarterback, you know, was over 100. He's 117. So, you know, I mean, a lot of it, I think, can come down to the fact that the, you know, Packers were really thin in the secondary. So I don't see Gunter getting let go this week. I think there's very little chance of that happening. Hey, by the way, did you see that Joe Callahan got picked up by the Saints when they cut him this week to make room for either Pinnell or for Goodson? I don't know if you noticed that or not.
I did see that real quick. So Callahan, all the great work he did in the preseason is no longer with us. But, you know, I think the call for the backup quarterback won't be Callahan. It'll be for Brett Hundley. So, so hopefully Callahan will have a nice career. I wonder if that'll be something we'll regret down the road.
You know, I don't think so. I think he's going to be a serviceable backup, kind of, I kind of get the Matt Flynn vibe from him, which, I mean, there's value in that. I mean, that's a good guy to have. I mean, Matt Flynn won a couple of games for the Packers. You felt as though he could step in and, you know, fill a couple of weeks. He did that. You know, he played well in some games that he didn't win for them. In fact, 2013, that season probably would have been lost, you know, without Matt Flynn coming in, signing him, winning a couple of games, the big comeback against Dallas. You might remember that.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
That's great.
You know,
game.
So if Joe Callahan develops into that, I think that's a good acquisition for the Saints, because they're going to, you know, have a quarterback situation before too long when Drew Brees hangs it up. They're going to have to, I don't think they'll turn to Callahan, but he'll be somebody that can probably back up and be around the league for a while.
Yeah.
Some other correspondents, the real Greg X in touch with us. Let me see. Oh, Patrick again from Ireland, Patrick Keough. Pete Colshorn, secret agent, super spy. Sorry again, Pete, that we didn't get you that super secret podcast right away, but glad we're able to correct that. Also, Khan, our Packer fan from down under, in touch with us this week as well. Hey, you know who also liked one of our tweets this week, Dave? Jarrell Presley. Do you remember Jarrell Presley?
Yeah, he's on my fantasy team.
Yeah, well, he's apparently is unemployed and checking Twitter because I had posted in response to Greg X. He was wondering if, you know, how I felt or how we felt about them not picking up a running back. And I said I wish they would have kept Brandon Burks or Jarrell Presley. Well, to nobody's surprise, Jarrell Presley liked that one.
Is that right?
Yes. Yeah.
What an interesting world we live in.
it is indeed.
That reminds me when last year when I said how well J.C. Treader was playing and his sister tweeted it.
Exactly. That's fantastic stuff.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah. So I mentioned Captain Dave, the slug line, the subject line is Bravo Zulu. Now I know that's B-Z. I'm trying to think B-Z. Bravo Zulu, what is that? Well, it's hard to say. You know, when he is, you know, our military attaché, he probably has codes and stuff and on an attaché case that is, you know, handcuffed to his wrist. I'm not exactly sure, but he'll probably explain that to us. Rusty in touch with us this week. Let's see, who else was here? Oh, we also had Tom from Germany. We appreciate that, checking in. I already mentioned Khan. Oh, and our guy Tom Freeman. From, I believe now, San Luis Obispo is where Tom is. He was in touch with us this week. And also Fred White, whose daughter is a student at the university where I work. And he was in touch, said some very nice things about our podcast. Also want to encourage me to go to the recent student production where his daughter is starring in this production. So that's pretty cool. Anyway, Fred has some really nice stuff to say, too, about the podcast and how much he enjoys that and how much he appreciates the university. So a lot of email this week, a lot of people tweeting at us. Thank you to everybody that takes the time to correspond at Packers Therapy or sends us an email, packerstherapy@yahoo.com. Thank you to everybody.
Yeah, you know, I should mention that if you are interested in the super secret podcast that we did three parts. I'll give you the titles of them. The first one was "Who Are These Guys?" where we open the kimono, as we say. We tell about who we are, our lives, our names, our family, what we do day to day when we're not doing the podcast. So we talk a little bit about ourselves. It's complete arrogance at the worst case, probably, but we would have
self-indulgent.
Yes, that's right. The second one was "How It's Made." We talked a little bit about how we do the podcast, how over time that's changed from the time we first started this in 2008. Is that right?
2005.
2005, sorry.
Yeah.
How that's evolved.
11 years, yeah.
Over time. And the third one was highlights of the podcast. We went back and remembered funny or serious or various things that happened over the years that we thought listeners would be interested in hearing. Those are so three files, probably about 2 hours worth of content. And if you'd like instructions to the Dropbox where you can get those, all you have to do is send us $10 or more to our PayPal account at PackersTherapy@yahoo.com. I give it to you for free, but it wouldn't be fair to everyone else who gave that money. So all you need to do is give us some cash, and you'll more than be compensated by learning all the things you never wanted to know about us. Would that be a fair way to say it?
I think it was all U.S. dollars, but we did get one in euros, right?
Correct. We did get a or in pounds, euros. I think it's in euros.
I think it was in euros. It was some weird – I think it might have been Patrick that sent us that one.
Might have been.
Yeah.
So
– dollars, Patrick, dollars, yeah. U.S. dollars.
It's getting stronger. Should we talk about the betting lines?
Do we have to?
Well, we have to go back to the Giants game.
Okay.
And what I think I might do just for the time is rather than go through – I will say that out of – there were – what kind of right here? Let's see. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. Seven and a tiebreaker was eight. The winner got five correct, so it wasn't a particularly great week. But the winners this last week against the Giants was Ryan Boyd and Brian Thompson.
All right.
Both got five correct. The tiebreaker, they both said total score is 42, so we have a tie.
Oh my.
So as much as we try to clean up the hotel and casino,
bunk beds again.
Move the bunk beds back in. All right, so you ready for this week's betting lines against the Bears?
Well, if somebody wants to participate, Dave, how do they go about participating in the betting lines?
They would – you'd think they would email me or you.
No.
But
no,
that
no.
would constitute as work. So That's we it. Have our intern, Mike Miller,
yes.
And you send an email to Mitno Miller. That's M-I-T, like the university, M-I-T-N-O, so M-I-T-N-O Miller, M-I-L-L-E-R @gmail.com, and somehow display your answers, and Mike will interpret those. So two emails, remember, mittnomiller @gmail is for betting lines, packerstherapy@yahoo.com is our email.
It's for cash.
And cash. And cash.
PayPal. Exactly. Yeah.
Against the Bears. Ready for number one?
Let's go.
Number one, there's going to be a lot of negative ones, I think, here. How many turnovers do you think Aaron Rodgers will produce against the Bears this week?
You know, he's had a tough season with that. He had – was it against the Vikings where he had the three fumbles?
What, yeah.
It was an absolute mess. And even if, you know, the team recovers them, I think it has the effect of kind of gumming up the works, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
So the Bears, on the other hand, I would like to think that they're going to try to employ this keep Rodgers in the pocket thing. And when you do that, though, he does tend to wait a while for it. And that's when the pocket will eventually collapse. And that's when these kind of mistakes happen. I think he's going to be cleaner. And I'm going to set the over-under at 1.5.
0.5. I'm going to take the under. I feel that... my overall theme this week is that they're going to, because it's a short week, well, actually, that may fly in the face of my theory here, but I feel like they're going to pick up where they left off this game and do a lot more short passes, get the ball out quicker. I think if there was any defiance that Rodgers was holding on to, I think this week breaks him. So I think he will be more efficient. I think he'll have no interceptions, no fumbles this week.
Well, he's been sucking down that scotch now for a couple hours, so I'm probably guessing he's feeling better about the game.
Yeah, he probably is. I wonder if Olivia's in town. I wonder what the record is when she's in town. That's another because apparently she doesn't come to every game. So I wonder what that is. But regardless,
well, we'll have to wait and see what McGinn says about Olivia Munn.
Yeah. Okay. Number two, how many touches do you think Ty Montgomery will have?
Ty Montgomery, this was a breakout game for him today. 10 receptions, targeted 12 times, had that really good kickoff return, too, toward the end of the game.
Yeah, that's right.
About a 40-yard return. And so I'm wondering if they're starting to think, hey, this is a guy, you know, we can use in lots of different ways. He also had three carries, only 6 yards. But, hey, you know, I'm thinking between catches – and now you're not counting returns, right? You're just counting rushing and pass receiving.
Correct.
So today he had 13. I don't think it's going to be quite that many, but I will set the over under touches at 7.5.
Wow, that's a high number. I got to go the under on that one. Well, you know, Lacey's hurt. I'm going to switch. I'm going to go the over. I think he gets a couple carries. Say he gets 2 carries. That means I got to get 6 catches. It's a lot of catches, but especially if it's a short week up for Lacy. Yeah, he could get six catches. I'm gonna say the over. I'm gonna go with my theory. Stick with it.
All right. Then.
Number three. How many passing yards do you think Brian Hoyer will have? Would you like to know what Brian Hoyer's passing yards were this week? He threw for 302, actually net 297 yards against Jacksonville, who now no longer is the team on the rise that we thought they were in week one.
Yeah. It's kind of funny. I thought that they were going to, you know, be a team that would emerge this year. So that was wrong. And the teams I didn't think were going to be that good, hey, those teams are pretty good.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
So let's see here. Hoyer, Packers, I think, are probably going to be without Shields again. I think you're going to see him after the Bears game when they have another 10 days. So I don't think you're going to see Shields. It looked to me, when Randall went down in this game too again, don't forget, he looked like he was in some pretty good pain. So I don't think he's going to play. I'm not sure what the Rollins deal is. I'm going to guess he's going to be back. So if you're looking at Rollins and Gunter as your cornerbacks, who else? They lost somebody else on defense today too. I'm trying to think who else they lost today.
Good question. Let me look. Yeah. You said Blake Martinez got dinged up a little bit then.
Right. Toward the end. So that's the reason I'm thinking about all these things is because I think that's going to affect the yardage. I don't think he'll be a 300-yard passer against the Packers. So if I'm going to set the over-under, I'm going to set it at 265.
265. I'll take the good call. I'm going to take the under on that. I think the defense rises a bit against the Bears. I think it might be a low-scoring affair on both sides. But so I think I'm going to take the under for his passing yards. Packers gave up, let's see, rushing to Dallas, 191 yards, 157 to Ezekiel Elliott.
Right.
Another Ohio State person who came to Wisconsin this weekend and made me feel terrible. How many yards will Chicago get against the Packers? Just to give you some perspective, they rushed for 92 yards against Jacksonville.
Now, you're talking total rushing yardage or like for a particular back?
Total team rushing yardage.
Okay.
Including Hall.
Yeah. 92 today against Jacksonville. I'm going to put their over-under, and the Packers defense is a little bit dinged up here. So I'm going to put the over-under. I kind of like the 92, but I don't want to go quite there. I think I'm going to put the over-under for this at 98.
98. All right, I'm going to take the under on that. It's a little bit of a shot against Sitton, too. I don't know if he's playing still or what's his deal. I will say that of all their problems, if you'd have told me we'd be gnashing our teeth at this point in the season, I would have thought that the fact that we let Sitton go would have been an issue. Of all their problems, I don't think left guard is one of the main things that I'm worried about. Lane Taylor has been pretty good and silent.
He's been just fine. Yep.
Number five, Packers got – did they get any sacks today? Probably only because of
they got two sacks today.
Were they legit sacks? I mean, I think they were more like based on fumbles.
Well,
one of them, ball got knocked out of his hand.
Right. One of them was a team sack as listed, and Peppers got the other sack.
And that was one where he knocked it out of his hand. So
correct.
How many sacks do you think we'll get? I mean, that's one I always like against the Bears because usually it's Cutler back there and we're sacking him left and right. How many sacks do you think we'll get against Hoyer?
That's interesting. I think I'm going to put that number at 2.5.
2.5. All right. I'm going to take over. Defensive struggle. I think that'll be better. Number six, Lacy. How many rushing yards will Lacy have?
Boy, he was hobbled today, and it wouldn't surprise me to see him sit this one out entirely. So I am going to set I'm going to hedge my bet a little bit, but I'm going to set the number pretty low. I'm going to say 38 yards.
38 yards. I'm going to take the over. I think he plays. I think they don't care about his health. I think they know it's a short ride on that guy. And one is, I think it's pretty much confirmed that he has not lost weight from last year.
Yeah, he looks pretty much like he did.
I think.
Although he's jumping over guys, though, today. That was pretty impressive.
Like four or five times. I'm at the point now where I'm like, leave Eddie Lacy alone and tell Aaron Rodgers to put some weight on. Because that's not the problem, is the weight. It's what's going on in his head.
Yes.
Number seven, this is a yes or no question. Do you think the Packers will have an offensive play that's greater than 35 yards?
Well, I don't have to set a line here, though, because
you
this is...
You have to
this
say
is...
yes or no. Yeah. All right. So you don't have... Yeah. Well, I'll say...
Yeah, so this is up to the people.
I will say no. What will you say?
I'm going to say yes.
All right, you
say I think they... No, but this includes returns.
Not returns.
This is 35 yards from scrimmage?
From scrimmage, correct.
I'm still going to... I think they're due for at least a 35-yarder.
All right. And then the tiebreaker number eight is the total score. Once again, what do you think? This doesn't count for the – this is a tiebreaker. I'm just asking your opinion.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. You think it'll be a low-scoring game. I kind of am inclined to think that, not because I respect the Bears' defense so much. It's because I'm not sure the Packers' offense can get out of their way. It's only 4 days, you know. So I could see this being kind of a 21-17 kind of game. So I'll put it at 38.
Chris says 38. I'm going to say 31. I think it's going to be 17-14 Packers.
All right.
A game that we'll win, but we'll be frustrated. And if that happens, we'll be 4-2. It's really not terrible after six games.
4-2. I mean, that kind of keeps you in the conversation. I mean, right now it looks like the Vikings are really the class of the division and maybe even the class of the conference.
Yeah. At least at this point. But, things do change week to week pretty quickly. Look at the Eagles were riding high.
Yeah. And then they've lost these games. Yeah, are they 3-2 or 3-3 now? 3-2, I think.
I think they only have – if they have a bye, let's see. They are 3-2. So quickly turn.
Same as the Packers, yeah.
Oops, I better turn that. My ESPN just launched into a video. So that's cool. Your betting lines. That's what we have this week, other than pop culture.
Yeah. So what you got on pop culture, Dave?
I have two. One is an up-and-comer, and one is a movie that I just loved. Loved, and I want to recommend it to everyone that likes any of my recommendations. The first one is the new HBO show called Westworld.
I was going to mention that, too.
Have you started watching it?
I've just watched the first episode.
I really like the premise of this show. I've watched two episodes now. I won't spoil anything other than to say the premise is basically it's like Jurassic World, right?
Right.
It's where they put people in.
It's the same author.
Oh, that's true. Michael Crichton did both. You're right.
Right.
Where people in the future are put into the Wild West, where it's replicants or robots, or I guess they call them hosts on the show,
right.
That they can basically get immersed in the Wild West, and they can live out whatever fantasy they want in the Wild West.
This is kind of a resort is what it is.
Yeah. You can be a good guy or a bad guy.
Right.
You can't get hurt, but you can shoot all the robots you want, apparently, or do whatever
right.
you want to all the robots.
Oh, yeah, sure.
But apparently as it's kind of coming together, the robots are starting to become self-aware. And that is a pretty interesting where this could be leading, given the atrocities these poor robots have to go through with these people living out their fantasies. So where this goes...
It sounds to me, though, Dave, that you didn't see the movie that came out in the 70s.
Oh, no, with Yul Brynner?
Right.
I have not seen it. It's a brand new idea to me.
All right. It's worth watching. James Brolin is in it, I believe. Yul Brynner, I forget who else is in it. It's definitely worth checking it out because it'll give you a little background to what the story's about. It's a luxury resort where you pay exorbitant money to come in and live a vacation of debauchery.
Yeah, that's right. But it's in the Wild West. It's not just any
right.
theme. It's all in horses, you know, cowboy
right.
hats,
sure. exactly.
six shooters, the whole thing. Really interesting stuff. Well made. Music is great. So I know I'm going to just really enjoy this series. And for a movie... I had to fly to Portland and California and then back this week, and I rented a movie as a documentary, and I'm starting to think that documentaries are more the way to go these days than regular movies. I watched a movie called Life Animated, and Life Animated is about this boy who is autistic, and it talks about his growing up experience through his life, his eyes, his parents, his brother, his teachers and counselors and things. But the thing with him being autistic is that he was able to express himself through the Disney animated movies that he watched through his life, and how he was able to kind of come into a life of his own, but he really could only to relate to people and express himself through these animated movies that most of us kind of grew up with. And I mean, as inspiring a movie, I think, if I've ever seen, I can't recommend it highly enough. I went out and just bought it after I rented it. If you like anything I like, and like documentaries to some degree, and if you're a parent, it'll just tug at your heartstrings for sure. Watch this movie called Life Animated. It was just very, very excellent. So those are mine.
And I just have one more to add, and I'm not all the way through, but I did watch most of the third season of Halt and Catch Fire. And I think we've talked about this before on the podcast. First season of that, it was okay. Second season was really quite good. Third season's probably even better. If you're not watching Halt and Catch Fire, you're not alone. A lot of people are not watching it. It has been renewed for a fourth season on AMC. It's a damn shame they didn't, give a break like that to the show Rubicon before they canceled it. But Halt and Catch Fire, go back, endure the first season. It's not great. It's okay. But endure it so you can get to the second season and the third season, which are just really, I think, really fine television. And it's very engrossing. Strongly recommend Halt and Catch Fire.
Sounds good. I need to catch that. My wife watched the first season, said I would love it. And so she thought the first season was actually pretty good. So that is definitely on my list to watch, too.
Yeah, I would recommend it. They really kind of reboot the show in the second season. They sort of change the focus. The characters remain, but they sort of change the focus of the show and who gets emphasized. And it was a really shrewd decision. And it's a shame that so many people kind of lost it someplace during the first season. But AMC, to their credit, they kept it going, and they're going to give it one more season after this one. So, yeah, absolutely check it out. I wish we could go back and reboot this Packer game. 30-16, a 2-touchdown defeat at home to the hated Cowboys. Packers had won 5 in a row against the Cowboys. So they get a little bit of their revenge. Packers still stumbling around in the dark on offense, losing guys actually on both sides of the ball, but especially on defense. Got the Bears coming up in just 4 days, yet another home game at Lambeau Field. We're going to be back next weekend to tell you about that Bears game. But until that time, I'm Chris.
And I'm Dave.
And that's Packers Therapy. I'm Chris.
And I'm Dave.
And that's Packers Therapy.